Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Looks like Must Club.
Or maybe the reverse. More than 100,000 people gathered in central London this past week to hear Steve Bannon and Elon Musk join British leaders at a rally, a far-right anti-immigrant protest. Musk appeared by video link, warning, quote, "Whether you choose violence or not, violence is coming to you. You either fight back or you die," unquote. Elon Musk. The business secretary of the British government said Musk's words were totally inappropriate and slightly incomprehensible, although I understood them. Said a spokesperson for the British Prime Minister, "I don't think the British public will have any truck with that kind of language." Maybe a station wagon, but you know, Musk has praised far-right causes in the UK and Europe, including the Alternative Party, Alternative for Germany Party. Police said at the rally, there was significant aggression of some people, which left 26 officers injured and 24 people arrested. So maybe they took Elon at his word. Always a good idea. Hello, welcome to the show.
Now the streets are getting light on the west side. Should be tired, but there's something keeps me wired on the west side. Air so sweet, it almost stops the aching. Just 1 hour, the city will be shaking. Knocked down, undone, just one place left to run. One place left to run, yeah. Head uptown, now I'm soaking up the sound of the west side. Needle Square, all the regulars are there on the west side. Taxi drivers waving like they know me. Broadway local trembling below me. Just one place left to run. Just one place left to run. Ready to, ready, to bounce on the west side. Well, I'm ready to. No predicting who you'll find on the west side. Hey, don't I know you from someplace? Share a cup of a little pick-me-up on the west side. Sidewalk profit promises salvation. By and by, we'll book them at the station. Knock down, undone, just one place. I said wipe out, bounce back. Well, it's hold on, half gone, just one place left to. Ready to, ready, to bounce on the west side. Well, I'm ready to, ready, to bounce on the west side. Well, I'm ready to, ready, to bounce on the west side. I'm ready to.
Ready,
just as long as it's not in New York. From New Orleans, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. It's been a really remarkable week, ladies and gentlemen. Let's start it off, or finish it off, with this. Time to follow the dollar. Ben & Jerry's co-founder, Jerry Greenfield, is leaving the ice cream brand after 47 years. Didn't know the ice cream was that old. Saying that the independence the company once had to speak up on social issues has been stifled by its parent company, Unilever. That's right, only one lever. In a letter which co-founder Ben Cohen posted on social media on Greenfield's behalf, Greenfield said he could not, in good conscience, remain at Ben & Jerry's, citing a loss of independence to Unilever, which he said had originally agreed to give Ben & Jerry's autonomy around its social mission when Unilever acquired the brand more than two decades ago. Quote, "For more than 20 years under their ownership, Ben & Jerry's stood up and spoke out in support of peace, justice, and human rights, not as abstract concepts, but in relation to real events happening around the world," Greenfield wrote. Continuing, "It's profoundly disappointing to come to the conclusion that the independence, the very basis of our sale to Unilever, is gone," unquote. Unilever acquired Ben & Jerry's in 2000 for $326 million. Well, that'll buy you a lot of independence, won't it? At the time, Ben & Jerry said the partnership would help the progressive Vermont-based ice cream company expand its social missions. Experts, who the Associated Press consulted, stressed that preserving complete independence from a corporate owner is never promised. More like a dream. And, on a related subject, still following the dollar, at least one self-described ex-CEO of the Walt Disney Company is extremely disappointed in the current brass's decision to bench Jimmy Kimmel over the late-night host's remarks about the reaction to Charlie Kirk's fatal shooting and also some strong-arming from the Trump administration, declaring that he finds Jimmy Kimmel very talented and funny. Michael Eisner said, "Where's all the leadership gone?" The suspending indefinitely of Jimmy Kimmel immediately after the chairman of the FCC's aggressive yet hollow threatening of the Disney company is yet another example of out-of-control intimidation, said Eisner, who was head of Disney for 20 years. That's all. He added, "Maybe the Constitution should have said Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press except in one's political or financial self-interest," unquote. Without naming either Bob Iger, head of the company, or Disney Entertainment chief Dana Walden, they supposedly made the call together to shutter Kimmel's show. Eisner makes no bones or skin about who he's talking about. Eisner and Iger, his successor, was a corporate bloody affair, the takeover, but the longtime colleagues have had a good personal relationship for a while. That relationship, like Iger's legacy, may be feeling a little bit of strain right now. And, ladies and gentlemen, in all the talk about the ousting of Jimmy Kimmel, two thoughts. One, just 9 days before he was shown the door, Spinal Tap was a musical guest on the Kimmel Show, so I guess I take a share of personal responsibility for his dismissal. You know, it's just possible the FCC chairman was anti-Tap. But more seriously, ABC did have an alternative. As you know, probably, ABC was threatened by a large owner of affiliated stations called Nexstar, which is planning to merge with a other company that owns affiliated stations to become an even larger company, since there are pretty lax rules on the number of stations a company can own. So ABC, as I say, was threatened by that company with dropping the Kimmel Show anyway. But they had an alternative. They could have put it on YouTube for free. Most reports now indicate YouTube has more viewers than the broadcast networks. So the advertisers would have been happy. And Nexstar could have cried all the way to the bank. Follow the dollar. And now, news of the godly. This come as a bit of a shock if you realize what a strongly Catholic country Poland is or was. Dateline Krakow, the level of trust in the Catholic Church in Poland has hit a record low. Only one-third of traditionally Catholic Poles now trust the Church. This according to CatholicReview.org. The level of distrust has almost doubled recently, skyrocketing from 24.2 to 47.1%. Commentators in Poland blame the fall on the bishops, too engaged in politics, money, there's that money again, and not taking care of the abuse crisis. The Polish Institute for Market and Social Research Foundation released a poll conducted for the Polish press agency, noting that the total percentage of people who declare trust either strongly or rather strongly in the Catholic Church plummeted by over 22% and has fallen by 58% from September 2016 to 35.1% in the same month this year. The most alarming change occurred within 1 year between October last year and September this year. The trust index fell by 4%. The percentage of those who say they strongly distrust the church increased by 4.8%. Yes, you're right. That's what the polls say about the polls. News of the godly. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now some news of the warm. EPA, that's Environmental Protection Administration, Administrator Lee Zeldin, announced that the United States is going to dismantle a burdensome federal program that tracks greenhouse gas emissions across the U.S. economy. I feel the burden, don't you? The Greenhouse Gas Reporting Program, launched 15 years ago, covers more than 8,000 facilities, your power plants, your fuel suppliers, your factories, that together account for between 85 and 90% of the country's planet-warming pollution. Oh, that. This is from Agence France-Presse, by the way. Trump, who received hundreds of millions of dollars from the fossil fuel industry during his last election campaign, has heavily promoted new oil, gas, and coal extraction while moving to suppress competition from solar and wind, especially wind. He's down on wind. Alongside President Trump, EPA continues to live up to the promise of unleashing energy dominance that powers the American dream, said Zeldin of the EPA. The decision will undergo a public comment period before being finalized, so get your cards and letters in, ladies and gentlemen. Quoting Zeldin again, the Greenhouse Gas Reporting Program is nothing more than bureaucratic red tape that does nothing to improve air quality. Unquote. The program was established through an act of Congress. Oh, them. Whatever happened. The EPA argues it's not legally obligated to continue collecting the data, except for methane emissions. A climate law passed 3 years ago under Joe Biden established a methane fee on oil and gas operations. Republicans recently enacted that big, beautiful bill, so beautiful, so big, requiring such reporting only starting in 2034. Accordingly, the EPA, under Zeldin, says it will suspend all data collection until 2034. Again and again, this administration is trying to hide the data, hide the harms, says an official of the Union of Concerned Scientists, Julie McNamara, who says, quote, if we can't say what a factory is doing, we can't hold that facility accountable, unquote, warning that the lack of verifiable emissions data would undermine action at local, state, national, and international levels. However, interstellar levels remain the same. News of the warm. And now,
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Microplastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said.
No, not enough said. The production and the use of over 400 million tons of plastic each year has, as you know, polluted beaches, your rivers, and even the deepest parts of the ocean, reaching depths of up to 36,000 feet. In addition to visible environmental impacts, plastic contributes to climate change. It's estimated that plastic production generates 1.8 billion tons of greenhouse gases a year. But scientific evidence suggests now that using plastic materials in everyday life impacts human health. This from Science Daily. Large number of plastic particles detached from curtains, furniture, clothing, and other plastic objects. Politicians? No. These particles remain suspended in the air, dissolve in drinking water, adhere to food, and can be inhaled, ingested, or come into contact with people's skin. Consequently, scientists have found microplastics in blood, the brain, the placenta, breast milk, and now human bones. Human bones. Study linked to a research project supported by a Sao Paulo Institute and published in the journal Osteoporosis International. Who knew it was international? Reviewed 62 scientific articles and found that microplastics have been harming bone health in various ways. Ask your bones to... No, just listen. And one notable example is their ability to impair the function of bone marrow stem cells by promoting the formation of, stay with me now, osteoclasts. Those are multinucleated cells that degrade tissue through a process known as bone resorption. Bone resorption, I say. Quote, the potential impact of microplastics on bones is the subject of scientific studies and isn't negligible. For example, studies with bone tissue cells have shown that microplastics impair cell viability, accelerate cell aging. You were looking a bit old. And alter cell differentiation, in addition to promoting inflammation, says the coordinator of the Laboratory for Mineral and Bone Studies in Nephrology at the University of Campinas in Brazil. He reports that studies on animals have found that accelerated osteoclast senescence, I know, it's getting multi-syllabic in here, can compromise bone microstructure, causing dysplasia. This can lead to bone weakening, deformities, nice to see you, and potentially pathological fractures. Quote, in this study, the adverse effects observed culminated, worryingly, in the interruption of the animal's skeletal growth, says the researcher. He further explains that although the effects of these particles on bone mechanics aren't yet fully understood, the data suggests that the presence of the material in the bloodstream may compromise bone health. Quote, most strikingly, like what we've heard so far isn't striking enough, a significant body of research suggests that microplastics can reach deep into bone tissue, such as marrow, and potentially cause disturbances in its metabolism, which, as you know, is the only ism for me. News of microplastics. And now, ladies and gentlemen, you may know about this guy. I think I've mentioned him, yes, on more than one occasion. But we become increasingly aware, I say, of the role that Stephen Miller plays in the current administration on issues of... Well, we first discovered his role in the issue of immigration. Now, though, it's spreading to other areas, namely the response to the killing of Charlie Kirk on Kirk's podcast in a edition after his killing. Stephen Miller said of the left-wing political organizations, quote, it is a vast domestic terror movement. With God as my witness, we're going to use every resource we have at the Department of Justice, Homeland Security, and throughout this government to identify, disrupt, dismantle, and destroy these networks and make America safe again for the American people. It will happen, and we will do it in Charlie's name. Rolling Stone reports that Stephen Miller has become America's most powerful unelected bureaucrat. With the blessing of the felon-in-chief, Miller has been allowed to run and remake the country, says Rolling Stone, in a manner virtually unheard of for a U.S. government official of his rank. Any egregious policy from the Trump administration comes to mind. Chances are it was driven by Stephen Miller. Under Miller's guiding hand, the government can deport or kidnap and rendition you or your spouse without due process. That's the immigration stuff. The president can launch Justice Department criminal investigations into his enemies. The president and his lieutenants can arrest you at a routine courthouse check-in at your church outside your kid's school to fulfill immigration quotas. When Rolling Stone asked one senior administration official about Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, this source says, unprompted, that, quote, "He does what Stephen Miller wants him to do," unquote, except for the drinking. As a sometime resident of Santa Monica, I'm proud to report to you that as a teenager in Santa Monica, at Santa Monica High, SAMO, Miller craved nothing more than triggering the good-looking kids in school who wanted nothing to do with him. This, again, is from Rolling Stone. Jason Islas, who first met Miller at middle school in Santa Monica, says they and a third friend were a tight-knit band of outsiders who spent middle school doing, you know, preteen boy stuff. That all changed in the summer of 1999 between 8th and 9th grades when Islas says Miller informed him they couldn't be friends anymore. Quote, "One of the things he did say was that he didn't like the fact that I'm of Latin heritage," unquote, Islas. When Miller worked as a communications aide in the office of Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, later to be Trump's first attorney general, Miller was so disliked by his conservative colleagues that Republican staff on other offices would invent or spread malicious rumors about Miller, such as the one recently popularized again, that he liked to play with porcelain dolls. As the president's policy architect and enforcer, says Rolling Stone, he's obsessed, according to three Trump advisors, with deploying the might of the government to stamp out what he deems anti-white hatred and anti-white racism and anti-white discrimination, no matter the cost. Miller speaks almost exclusively in apocalyptic terms, in the language of military combat, war, and invasion against the culture and the homeland. He wants camps for detention and mass deportation. He is Jewish, but has been denounced by his own uncle as a one-man betrayal of Jewish moral and political values. To Trump, according to Rolling Stone, Miller is a useful battering ram, the policy answer to his lingering question, "Where's my Roy Cohn?" The architecture of Trump's military crackdowns in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Memphis, and soon New Orleans is in part a product of Miller's vision for dominating liberal strongholds that he despises, says a fellow Trump advisor. "It's a blast for Stephen," unquote. He's known for working long hours, micromanaging the brutal policies coming out of the new administration. He becomes enraged if he feels the immigrant arrest numbers aren't padded enough or if he believes Trump's domestic agenda is being stalled, even slightly. That's Stephen Miller. And here's the Stephen Miller Band.
You can bet I'm banking on cruelty to get the job done. Cause lefties are the pesties, killing off our besties, giving a bad name to the gun. So if you left or center, my guys are gonna hit her without knocking and knocking you out. We'll invent a legal theory that makes your lawyers weary and lock you where you can't even shout. We'll keep arresting you, baby, nailing you, baby, jailing you, baby, impaling you, baby. With chip on their shoulder for sure. Our country's what they're hating, with their violent demonstrating. Our heavy hands the only cure. So all of us are praying, and some of us are saying that the eagle's gonna lose its left wing. Oh, don't you tell the eagle, it'll all be extra legal, and freedom's gonna have a new ring. We'll keep a spying on you, baby, keep denying bail, baby. You'll keep crying foul, baby. You'll be dying off, baby, 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 baby.
Oh, hear me now? Gonna won't you hear me now? Gonna won't you hear me now?
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen. Why, it's another Steve Miller.
Time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future.
News of time in the future, ladies and gentlemen. Winding clocks an hour back this fall, when daylight savings time ends across much of the U.S., might do more than just disrupt sleep. According to Scientific American, evidence suggests such time changes could damage health in the long run. A new study published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences indicates that eliminating these repeated time shifts and keeping standard time permanently might help lower rates of obesity and stroke. Well, I like daylights. Maybe obesity. Quote, our work reveals there may be greater health benefits on a population level if we switch to a permanent standard time, says study co-author Lara Weed from Stanford. Quote, we hope that policymakers take a peek at the rates of disease in their individual states when they're making assessments on how to incorporate the information we provided, unquote. Past research has shown that switching to standard time every fall and daylight saving time every spring brings various kinds of negative consequences, a higher rate of heart attacks and car accidents, along with disruptions to sleep, alertness, alertness, and productivity. Several international scientific associations, your AMA, your American Academy of Sleep Medicine, have spoken out against time shifting, arguing the greater morning light exposure provided by standard time could help reduce many of these problems. To investigate the long-term health effects of a single time policy, Weed looked at how these two time observations used in most U.S. states affect the body's circadian system, the internal biological clock. That system is responsible for keeping you synchronized with the outer world, keeping your organ system synchronized, according to Weed. When you have changes in your light exposure pattern, especially ones that might affect the timing of the circadian clock, you might also have impacts on these different organ systems. The results of her and her associates' research showed that over the course of a year, most people would experience fewer abrupt changes to their circadian rhythms under permanent standard time, your PST, in which morning light exposure is greater. Of course, the sun sets earlier. With whole year standard time, the study estimates U.S. obesity prevalence would drop by 0.8%, roughly 2.6 million fewer people with obesity. Stroke prevalence would fall by about 0.09%, 300,000 fewer cases. Permanent daylight savings time, yeah, would also help, but at a lesser rate. That healthcare-wise is definitely significant, says a neuroscientist from the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota who was not involved in the new research. So much for time. Now, the future. Two flying cars crashed into each other at a rehearsal for an air show in China, this week. It was meant to be a showcase for flying car technology. Oops! The Xping Aero HT vehicles collided in midair, according to the BBC. One caught fire during landing, the company said in a statement to Reuters. People at the scene were safe, but CNN reported one person was injured in the crash, citing an anonymous company employee. BBC News has asked for comment from Xping, the company. Footage on Chinese social media site Weibo appeared to show a flaming vehicle on the ground, which was being attended by fire engines. One vehicle sustained fuselage damage and caught fire upon landing, Xpeng said in a statement to CNN. All personnel at the scene are safe, it added. The electric flying cars take off and land vertically. Sounds like fun, doesn't it? And the company is hoping to sell them for around $300,000 each. Earlier this year, Xpeng claimed to already have around 3,000 orders for the vehicle. No reports yet of them testing the flying cars in areas where there are helicopters flying. Time in the future, ladies and gentlemen. More LeShoal after this important message.
Hey, it's Kevin. I used to ask, how do you cash back? Now I'm here to tell you how I bet and get double or triple my cash back. I stopped old-style guesswork betting and let my AI friend pick the winners. After all, I'm smart. Hey, I'm still in show business, but AI is smarter. And that's the secret behind the country's hottest new sports book, BetPlug. I've watched my games with my buds, who are paid extras, while BetPlug does all the work. It analyzes stats, computes the odds, even opens the beers. Just kidding. Then BetPlug figures out the smartest bet on each game, and all I do at the end of the games is throw out the empties and collect my winnings. It's as easy as that. Even easier, because I have someone else take out the trash. And now small print time. Not every bet is a winner. Chatbots makes mistakes. Double check for accuracy. But if you want to take the chance out of any game of chance, do what I do. Or better yet, do what I say I do. And move your action to BetPlug. It's in you.
Speaking of which, ladies and gentlemen, here's news of AI. With a jingle created by a chatbot.
AI's great, just first rate. Love or hate, it's the gold state. AI is fine, like a well-aged wine. More like rhyme than turpentine.
Pope Leo the 14th, there have been 13 Leos before him? Wow. Has gotten rid of the idea of creating an AI version, which would have allowed Catholics around the world to have a virtual audience with him without a need for a trip to Vatican City. This from the British tech journal, The Register. Despite being the first pope to come from the United States, home of AI, the latest pontiff wasn't thrilled with the idea of what he described as an, quote, artificial me, unquote. Sounds good to me. Quote, if there's anybody who should not be represented by an avatar, I would say the Pope is high on the list, unquote him, in an interview with a papal journalist and biographer. The Pope, talking about a subject which would have flummoxed popes of the 20th century, said he was asked to sign off on an AI Pope. Doesn't say by whom. He wasn't impressed with the idea. Quote, someone recently asked authorization to create an artificial me so that anybody could sign onto this website and have a personal audience with, quote, the Pope, unquote, he said. This artificial intelligence Pope would give them answers to their questions. And I said, quote, I'm not going to authorize that, unquote. Yeah, they might ask about child abuse. Oh, no, not... AI models often produce false outputs or hallucinations. Now, OpenAI has admitted they may result from fundamental mistakes it makes when training its models. This also from the Register. The admission came in a paper published early this month titled, Why Language Models Hallucinate, written by three OpenAI researchers and a distinguished professor of computer science at Georgia Tech. It concludes, quote, the majority of mainstream evaluations reward hallucinatory behavior, unquote. Fundamental problem, AI models are trained to reward guesswork rather than the correct answer. Guessing might produce a superficially suitable answer, telling users your AI can't find an answer. Well, that's less satisfying. As a test case, the team tried to get an open AI bot to report the birthday of one of the paper's authors. It produced three incorrect results because the trainers taught the engine to return an answer rather than admit ignorance. OpenAI itself admits, quote, over thousands of test questions, the guessing model ends up looking better on scoreboards than a careful model that admits uncertainty, unquote. I blame scoreboards. The authors of the study explained that the pre-training stage of almost any AI model building embeds this unhelpful behavior because the info that trainers feed into models contains many examples of certain data, such as correct spellings of words. If a few misspellings make it into the body used to train a model, AIs still have many examples of correct spellings, could learn how to produce accurate results, but when the body used to train a model does not contain a learnable pattern of data, such as in the birthday example, the AI takes a shot and often misses. Quote, the hallucination rate after pre-training should be at least the fraction of training facts that appear once, the paper says. If 20% of birthday facts appear exactly once in the data, then one expects base models to hallucinate on at least 20% of birthday facts. Techniques used in the post-training stage of model development make it worse. Quote, many language models benchmark mirror standardized human exams using binary metrics such as accuracy or pass rate, the paper says. Optimizing models for these benchmarks may therefore foster hallucinations. Humans learn the value of expressing uncertainty outside of school in the school of hard knocks. Language models are primarily evaluated using exams that penalize uncertainty. Unquote. Ultimately, it's about stating something, even if it's wrong. The authors liken it to a multiple choice questionnaire where even if you pick vaguely plausible answers at random, you're likely to score better than if you pick no answers at all. Quote, we argue that the majority of mainstream evaluations reward hallucinatory behavior. In theory, AI model makers could eliminate hallucinations by just using a data set that contains no errors, but the paper admits such a scenario isn't remotely possible, since the huge volumes of data used in training likely contain mistakes. And Jeffrey Hinton, long considered a godfather of AI, he won the Nobel Prize in Physics last year, has a complicated relationship with the tech he pioneered at Google a long time ago. He's long argued that AI poses an existential risk to humanity. Signed a letter earlier this year calling on OpenAI not to betray its nonprofit roots. But even in his own personal life, according to futurism.com, Hinton can't escape the text. In an interview with the Financial Times, he revealed his ex-girlfriend of several years had broken up with him by using ChatGPT. She got ChatGPT to tell me what a rat I was, he told the newspaper. She got the chatbot to explain how awful my behavior was and gave it to me. I didn't think I'd been a rat, so it didn't make me feel too bad, he added in his own defense. Highlights just how pervasive the tech has become in everyday life. Hinton's ex is far from alone, is using ChatGPT to dump their significant other. Particularly for young people, OpenAI's chatbot has become a crutch during breakups, helping draft breakup texts, and even pushing users into divorce. AI is great. And now, the apologies of the week.
So sorry.
Totally unrelated. Deadline Hong Kong American tennis player Taylor Townsend apologized this week for her comments about Chinese food. Many people had criticized those comments as culturally insensitive. Townsend is in the Chinese tech hub of Shenzhen for the finals of the Billie Jean King Cup. She came under fire after she expressed shock and confusion at local delicacies served as a buffet, including your bullfrogs and your soft-shelled turtles. Quote, what the hell? Townsend said of sea cucumbers that were among the dishes available. That was in a video posted on her Instagram account that has since been deleted. Quote, this is crazy. I've never seen one of these up close, especially not to eat. Unquote. In another video, Townsend questioned whether the bullfrogs offered at the buffet were poisonous and would cause warts and boils. Quote, these people are literally killing frogs, bullfrogs, said Townsend. She expressed disbelief at the sight of animal organs, including chicken hearts, gizzards, and a, quote, big ass, unquote, sliced lung. She ate only noodles in the restaurant. Comments widely criticized as culturally insensitive, said a Weibo user. That's a Chinese equivalent of Twitter or Blue Sky. The world doesn't revolve around you, another poster said. Townsend has issued an apology saying that she has, quote, had nothing but the most amazing experience in China, and that her previous remarks were, quote, not representative of that at all. I just truly want to apologize, she said in a video on Instagram. There's no excuse, there's no words, and for me, I will be better. I understand that I am so privileged as a professional athlete to be able to travel all around the world and experience cultural differences, which is one of the things I love so much about what I do, unquote. No comment from the bullfrogs. Radio Canada is apologizing after one of its reporters used anti-Semitic language during a television broadcast this week. Yes, Radio Canada does television. Why do you? Correspondent Elisa Serrett was doing a television hit from Washington about Marco Rubio's visit to Israel, a trip that came soon after Israeli forces launched strikes on Hamas targets in Qatar. Asked by the host of a news program why the U.S. has not distanced itself from Israel in the wake of the military action, Serrett said, in French, the Israelis, in fact, the Jews, finance a lot of American politics and control, quote, a big machine. She added, America's big cities and Hollywood are, quote, run by Jews, unquote. In a statement posted to its website, Radio Canada described her remarks as stereotypical, anti-Semitic, erroneous, and prejudicial allegations against Jewish communities. These unacceptable comments contravene Radio Canada's journalistic standards and practices and in no way reflect the opinion of the public broadcaster. As a result, the news department has decided to relieve the journalist of her duties until further notice. We are aware that these comments have offended many viewers. We sincerely apologize and regret this. The anchor said in his own statement he should have intervened after Sarah made her remarks. He also apologized for what transpired. And speaking of television, Fox News Channel host Brian Kilmeade apologized this week for advocating for the execution of mentally ill homeless people in a discussion on the network, saying his remark was, quote, extremely callous, unquote. Kilmeade's initial comment came on a Fox and Friends episode, began getting widespread circulation over the weekend. He's a co-host of the morning show. He was talking with his co-hosts about a murder on a light rail train in Charlotte, North Carolina. A homeless and mentally ill man was arrested for the murder. The case received extensive attention on Fox following the release of a security video of the stabbing. The host of co-host of Fox and Friends was talking about public money being spent on trying to help homeless people, suggesting those who didn't accept services offered to them should be jailed, quote, or involuntary lethal injection or something. Just kill them, unquote, Kilmeade. Ainsley Earhart interjected, why did it have to get to this point? Said Kilmeade in response, I will say this, we're not voting for the right people, unquote. During a later appearance on Fox and Friends, Kilmeade said, quote, I wrongly said they should get lethal injection. I apologize for that extremely callous remark. I'm obviously aware that not all mentally ill homeless people act as the perpetrator did in North Carolina, and that so many homeless people deserve our empathy and compassion, unquote. Fox News management, no immediate comment. And of course, Kilmeade is still broadcasting on Fox. And from Ireland, the Diocese of Raphoe has issued an apology to two Donegal sisters, survivors of abuse by a former priest. Margaret and Paula Martin were abused by then priest Father Con Cunningham. I said Con. The convicted pedophile spent 16 years of his retirement out of ministry in the parish of Carrick in South Donegal, despite several complaints. The statement was issued by the diocese administrator of the Diocese of Rapo. Following a process of engagement with Margaret Martin and Paula Martin, two of the victims of Con Cunningham, at their prompting with their agreement, the Diocese of Rapo wishes to make public the apology presented to them. Our apology traces the history of how their complaints against Cunningham were addressed and the shortcomings of the diocese and the actions taken. Above all, it seeks to acknowledge the experience and perspective of these two sisters who have suffered so much and whose sufferings were compounded by a lack of adequate communication on our part. The desire of Margaret and Paula is one that is shared by me and which I hope will become more and more the culture of the diocese, namely to encourage those to come forward who have hesitated to do so and know they would be supported and accompanied in the actions they may wish to take. In particular, I would wish for a pastoral conversion, to quote a phrase beloved of the late Pope Francis, that communicates to victims of sexual abuse on the part of clergy that they're not viewed in any way as a threat, but rather welcomed as instruments of truth and justice. It's not easy to face behaviors and attitudes that shame us and call into question the nature and purpose of the church's ministry. Well, nothing's easy these days. It goes on. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. Back next week, same time, same radio station, hopefully. Or on your audio device of choice whenever you want it, because you don't get federal funds. And never did. A tip of Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks, to Pam Halstead and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this thing, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts. I think we're out of those finally. The playlist of the music here on and all sorts of stuff to watch and read and listen to and take in, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWN on New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.